Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
So how many of you have read an article in the money and investing section of your local paper or seen a talking head on TV espouse the benefits of a certain stock and you immediately called up your financial advisor, dollar signs flashing before your eyes? Well, our next guest says there's one small problem. None of these people know what they're talking about. Helene Olin is a blogger for Forbes and the author of the new book, Pound Foolish, Exposing the Dark Side of the Personal Finance Industry. Helene Olin, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
And listeners, we can take your calls. Does the finance industry give you good advice? Do you have a trusted source for your investing that's proven successful? Who or what is helpful? And what have you found to be a bunch of hot air? 212-433-WNYC or even a ripoff. 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show for our comments page. And Helene, going through your book, the gist of it looks like that this massive business that is personal finance and investment advice contains nobody who really knows anything. Really?
Well, what we know is that less than 1% of people can beat the market year after year after year. And yet we've developed this whole edifice of people who are telling you, do this investment, do that investment, do this and you'll be fine. And in fact, that's just not always the case. If they knew, rest assured, they probably wouldn't be trying to sell you the secret.
Of course, there are the Warren Buffetts and George Soros of the world, so somebody has to know something.
Well, as I said, the survey data shows that less than 1% of us have that ability, and the chances are it's not your financial advisor.
There's even a bigger issue here, as you frame it in the intro to the book, that Americans were sold on a dream that it's now becoming clear was never going to happen.
That's right. If you look at the history of the personal finance movement, it starts in the 1930s, very much as a response to the Great Depression. And it stays in this sort of small area for many, many years until the 1970s. And coincidentally, what happens in the 1970s? A couple of things. Income inequality begins to open up. Inflation starts to cause problems. And most important, perhaps, we become more and more responsible for our financial lives as our social safety nets are being cut and as financial innovations are debuting in the marketplace with very little in the way of consumer protection.
And some of that history is that you describe the commentator Sylvia Porter as the mother of personal finance.
Right.
I never heard of her until your book. I guess she was a big celebrity in her time who is all but forgotten today. Why was she so important?
She created personal finance. She was a girl from Long Island in her early 20s. Her mother lost all the family money in a stock market scheme in the 1929 crash. And she began writing for the New York Post and slowly over a period of years developed a column. And of course, by the way, this being the 1930s, people didn't know she was a woman for several years. But she developed this
genre. She didn't write under the byline Sylvia?
She did not write under the byline Sylvia till the mid-1940s. She was S.F. Porter.
Huh. And so she's giving what kind of advice?
She was doing everything from day-to-day advice to very political writing. She got into a huge dispute with FDR's Treasury Secretary Morgenthau. She was a devout Keynesian. She gave tax policy advice to Kennedy, President Kennedy.
Wow.
President Johnson actually said, I wish my economists could talk as straight as Sylvia Porter.
Wait, was that how Kennedy could set tax policy, or was that how he could avoid paying income taxes?
Well, we'd have to ask Sylvia, and she's gone.
But, you know, when you talk about most investment advice that most people get, it's pretty conservative, right? I mean, it's buy balanced mutual funds and have less money in stocks and more money in bonds the older you get. This is what most financial advisors will tell you. And that's considered conservative advice, not some Las Vegas crapshoot.
But that's not what a lot of people are hearing. That's if you're an advisor who's saying that, you're already ahead of the game. There's loads of people out there selling people on things, everything from, you know, gold investment schemes to annuity investments to real estate boondoggles to limited partnerships. And the banks are in on this too, by the way. It's across the board. If you go into your bank and ask for advice, you might well get sold on some high-cost mutual fund that is managed, which we know won't beat the stock market indexes year over year.
Right. I've noticed that. Actually, I've had that experience going into a bank for some other business and they tried to start selling me an annuity.
You are a cash stream, as they would put it.
But you're also very critical of, as you were of Sylvia Porter, today's big name personal finance gurus. But again, on who's giving what kind of advice, I want to play a clip of the famous Susie Orman, arguably the biggest finance media personality, appearing on this show back in 2007, responding to a similar criticism. Listen.
I have never advocated real estate as investing. We could document for you that January 21st of the year 2000, I told everybody to get out of the stock market. On television, when I stated things, I will always say owning a home as your primary residency will be the best investment in the long run you will ever make. I don't care what the real estate market is doing.
So again, to my ear, whether you like her style or not, Susie Orman tends to offer fairly conservative investment advice for mom and pop, doesn't she?
She often changes her advice, but she does a couple of things. First, she advocates you invest in the stock market while she admits she will not invest in the stock market, which a lot of financial planners have problems with. It's the sort of idea of eating your own cooking, as a cook would say. But second, that is not what she said. It's not completely true. She went on ABC TV in 2010 and said something along the lines of, I always said real estate would be the best investment you could ever make. Well, guess what? I was wrong. That was her apology.
David in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Helene Olin. Hello.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Good morning.
Good. Turn off your radio, David, and what's your question?
Certainly. I used to work, actually, as a financial advisor. That's number one. And I found that the best source of advice in the markets was on my weekends in the Science Industry and Business Library over on Madison Avenue. There's such a culture of corruption on the street. Basically, your job as a financial advisor is just to earn commission. That's your job, bottom line.
Is to what? You got garbled there just at the key word.
I said your job as a financial advisor is to earn commission.
Earn commission.
I would say that is correct for anybody who is working under the commission system. These people are salesmen first and foremost. And if you look at the recruiting material, it will even say things like, you don't need to be a financial expert. Learn how to sell financial products, and you will earn trips to places like Ireland, the Pacific Islands.
David, thank you for that candor. 212-433-WNYC, Mark in Glen Cove. You're on the air. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how are you today?
Good.
Good morning.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment on some newsletters that my father's deceased now. Left me a very nice stock portfolio. He was involved with Stephen Lieb from Personal Finance, who was advocating. He's got a book out, I think, towards $200 oil. But he was right on with a lot of his predictions. He advocated buying oil stocks probably in the mid-'80s. And my father made a lot of money with them. Philip Morris, four different stocks now. The other one that was that fellow he used to subscribe to Louis Rukeyser's newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I generally don't comment on specific newsletters. But what I would say is there have been numerous scandals with the newsletters over the years. So just because someone found a good one doesn't mean the rest of them are terrific. There have been numerous fines over the years. And in fact, Susie Orman's own stock newsletter, which she's now no longer sponsoring, featured a mutual fund manager who was beating the S&P because he had misstated the returns on some of the funds.
So what do you advise that people do with their money?
I have to confess, I have become a deep believer in index funds. And I realize that, yes, if the stock market falls 40% like in 2008, so will your index
fund. In other words, you're not betting to beat the market. You're just riding with the market.
The chances are you're not going to beat the market. The survey data says less than 1% of us will beat the market. So all you will do is end up costing yourself money trying to beat the market because, of course, trading costs become a huge factor at a certain point.
And so are there index funds that I don't know if you recommend, you know, particular funds, but is there a particular formula, like the kind of thing we were talking about before, where as you get older, you're less in stocks than you are in bonds or that kind of thing?
It's hard for me to give advice because advice, one of the problems we have with the financial gurus is they're giving one size fits all advice. And most of us are specific. We're not one size fits all. So what I urge is for people to go to somebody they trust, and that is somebody who is getting paid either by assets under management or by the hour, and discuss their situation.
So that's really important because
yes.
If you're going to write in your book that almost the whole industry is corrupt and gives bad advice, that there really are different types of financial advisors. So never work with somebody who gets a commission based on what they get you to invest in.
Right. And I want to stress one thing. I mean, obviously, some people who work under commission are great people, and they probably are giving good advice. But here's the thing.
But we as lay people have no way to know.
That's exactly it. You aren't going to know. And one of the things that goes on is you're discouraged from even asking questions. A survey came out of Harvard last year where the researchers hired a bunch of actors to go into banks and brokerages with sample portfolios and see what would happen. And these were all commissioned brokerages. And almost always these people recommended changes even when there was no need for it. And the only theory they could come up with was, of course, that, you know, they were so used to doing this that that was what they did.
And some of our listeners already know this. On our Facebook page, Janice writes, "I would only ever work with a fee-for-service financial planner rather than one who earns commissions. There's a big difference," she writes. On our comments page, Bob asks, "Is there any hope for anyone to retire in the future?" Of course, that's a big blanket question. But he writes, "It seems to me the answer is no. I've already decided to not have children and not travel and not spend money because I really don't see how I can do all those things and retire too when I get old." And you warn in your book that Americans are headed for a retirement train wreck.
That's right. That's John Bogle at Vanguard's words, not mine. The problem with what we did over the past 30 years was as we threw more and more responsibility on people, at the same time, their salaries were stagnating, our net worth was decreasing, and the costs of everything from health care to education to raising a child to housing was going up at rates well beyond that of inflation for decades, not years, decades. And then we were turning around and telling people, well, you're not saving enough money, when, of course, we didn't live in an environment where it was possible to save enough money. And even now, we're still doing that. In fact, if anything, we're telling people that they should be saving even more money. It used to be the conventional advice was to save 10% for retirement. Now it's 15%. Americans, more than 50% of us live paycheck to paycheck, and our current savings rate is around 3%.
And I don't know if Bob is just an anomaly, but he writes on our comments page that he's a white male in his mid-30s and so worried that he's not going to have money to retire when he gets old, that as you heard, he says he's not even going to have kids.
80% of people are petrified about retirement. And we know that the childbirth rate has fallen dramatically post-2008. We know that.
As a result of
financial— We believe it is as a result of the financial crisis.
Long-term concerns. Just a few seconds left, really, but I want you to mention one of the myth-busting moments in your book, and that is that women are not as good as men when it comes to handling money?
Absolutely untrue. The industry loves to claim this. They love to say we're too emotional to manage our funds. In fact, we earn less and live longer, and we have more responsibilities. That's most of our savings issue. And in fact, what little evidence we have shows when women actually do this, they are quite calm investors, and that they actually can often exceed male returns.
Another one to end on a good note, but you got to do it in 10 seconds. Another myth that small pleasures like the daily Starbucks latte can bankrupt you?
Healthcare can bankrupt you.
Not the latte.
Not the latte.
Helene Olin, a blogger for Forbes, is the author of Pound Foolish, Exposing the Dark Side of the Personal Finance Industry. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.